every single marketer and every single brand should be attempting to earn a disproportionate share of conversation.
If you work for an organization where they say, bring us a chart that goes up and to the right, you have a challenge.
Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The trouble is, I don't know which half.
I am here to inspire you, to excite you, to motivate you, to transform you, to energize you.
Hello and welcome to Pipeline Visionaries. This episode features an interview with Kristen Russell, the CMO at Simplr, a company that offers healthcare operations solutions anchored in governance, risk management, and compliance. In this episode, Kristen talks about not only creating a category, but also creating roles for the people who work in that category in an effort to organize their customers. She also discusses going to market with the human in mind and authentic marketing. But before we get into it, here's a brief word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Qualified. If you're a revenue team that runs your business on Salesforce, Qualified will accelerate your lead generation, pipeline, and ultimately revenue. Learn more at qualified.com.
And now, please enjoy this interview between Kristen Russell, CMO at Simplr, and your host, Ian Faison.
Welcome to Pipeline Visionaries. I'm Ian Faison, CEO of Caspian Studios. And today we are joined by a special guest. Kristen, how are you?
I am very good. It's great to be here, Ian. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks so much for joining. Thanks for being on the show. Excited to chat Simplr, chat marketing, and your background, everything in between. And our show is always brought to you by our friends at Qualified. You can go to qualified.com right now to learn about the number one conversational sales and marketing platform for companies that use Salesforce. Head over to qualified.com right now. Well, while you're listening to this, I suppose. First question, Kristen, what was your first job in marketing?
So my first job in marketing, it's sort of a quasi job. I started off as a speech writer for the office of the prime minister, which may not seem like a total marketing job, but I actually use those skills all the time. So I'm from Canada. It was kind of a cool job at the time. But from that, I went on to management consulting, MBA in France. I was an entrepreneur, strategy, M&A. I promise I'm going to get to marketing from the M&A activity, product and product marketing. So I actually been doing marketing for about 13 years now.
Incredible. What's the best lesson for someone who's trying to write more like a speechwriter?
Crisp, short, and to the point.
I mean, you can say that, can say that again about 50 times. We all need to be shorter.
You can say that.
I was just doing a session on how to market your podcast. And like the third lesson on the list was your episodes need to be shorter. Your copy needs to be shorter. Your editing needs to be tighter because all of that, no one's going to want to listen to your stuff and no one's going to click on the links if you have this long, laborious copy and everybody seems to like to do that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually in Canada, we used to have a question and answer period every day. And so you would have to prepare the prime minister for whatever kind of question and answer he's going to get. And so we would have copy and literally three bullets to cover world affairs. And on top of that, he wanted to come across as authentic, right? Like, but you're thinking on your feet. So we would add a little kind of joke or a little authentic moment for him so he could kind of flub it in English. We would include the, you know, we're talking about an issue with tailors, for example, we would have a stitch in time saves nine, but exactly how he was going to mess it up as well in French to English, just to kind of be relatable to the audiences. So I guess that's a pretty good lesson as well from a marketing perspective. Be relatable.
Yeah, indeed. Anywho, flash forward to today.
Yeah.
You're no longer a speechwriter, but in some ways you are a speechwriter. Tell us a little bit about your current role.
Absolutely. So I am the chief marketing officer at Simplr. Simplr exists to make healthcare easier. And so what we think about is if we do our job well, caregivers have more time to give care. That's kind of the top line. But what I mean by that is we're really in technology software. We focus on hospitals here in the United States, as well as health plans. So there's about 6,900 hospitals, 900 payers. We're all about servicing back office administrative solutions to those folks. You can think provider data management solutions, workforce management, supplier spend management. It's a lot of to your point, don't speak in jargon. Bottom line, the average hospital has somewhere between 500 to 1500 nurses, and all of those folks have to get scheduled. So we'll help with the scheduling. We'll help make sure they're showing up when they need to show up, that the right teams are put together. We also credential physicians. So the doctors that are taking care of your kids, you actually kind of want to make sure they actually are a doctor, went to med school, graduated, all that good stuff. We've got the software and the systems to support that. We put it all together and we really think about the fact that now we're able to offer a single platform in this space we call healthcare operations.
Sounds
I'm looking at your face to make sure you're still tracking. Like if you were like, that's a bit confusing, I would stop and explain more. But
no, not at all. I think it makes perfect sense. Sounds like you make healthcare simpler.
You got it.
If I had my way. Perfectly named company. That tracks exactly. And we're going to dig more into that in our first segment, The Trust Tree.
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the circle of trust.
What, I thought we were in the trust tree with in the nest, are we not?
Where we go and feel honest and trusted, and you can share those deepest, darkest marketing secrets. So we know a little bit more about the 6,900-ish types of organizations, types of healthcare companies that y'all do business with. Tell us a little bit more about that buying committee. Who buys your stuff?
Yeah. So we sell to really primarily to the CIO. This is going to be kind of the key kingpin in our world. Chief information officers, and then the VPs of IT. Sometimes it's a director, but I use that term CIO to sort of catch that entire group. That's really our primary area of focus. However, we have a lot of different solutions. We've got 31 different solutions across the space of healthcare operations, healthcare administrative solutions. So within that, we find that there's a different ICP for different groups. And so to keep ourselves somewhat organized, we organized all of our solutions into four pillars. We've got about 7 to 9 ICPs that are going to be in a average buying committee that we will focus on. Think about like a chief nursing officer, a chief financial officer, the CIO. You've got your directors of quality, directors of credentialing. It's going to depend on the specific solution set and the pillar that we're going after. But by and large, it's certainly a complex sale. I mean, Brent Adamson, that Challenger crew would eat their hearts out on the stuff that we do over here. But it's definitely a 5, 7, 9 person buying committee that we're working with on average. And what we typically see is the primary ICP, that CIO working alongside with one of those SMEs who's bringing us in. They may be our champion, and then they've got to get the CIO who owns the budget, who has all the IT purchasing power aligned. But the upside of that is because we're doing a platform play and we've got all of these different solutions, when the CIO kind of gets it and sees, hold on a second. I work with this one vendor here. Why don't I work with them over there? We see a lot of pull actually from the CIO as well, the ability to influence the buying committee and bring in more solutions under that single vendor concept.
Can I tell you that I love that on your website, simpler.com, S-Y-M-P-L-R.com, that y'all put by role next to solutions, because it drives me crazy when people don't do that, because that's how you search for things. You're like, hey, is this for me? Like, am I supposed to be owning this? Does somebody else own this? You know, et cetera. And so, you know, so easy to go there and to see, oh, compliance and IT and medical staff and nursing and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So anywho, I feel like that
honestly, I love that you call that out. I was with our whole sales team this morning. We had a sales town hall and I was talking with them about the fact that, you know, I play this like myth or fact game, like myth or fact. Is marketing developing content for people specifically or just our products? Because we really are focused on developing the content, on going to market with the human in mind. It's a big focus of kind of how we're going to market right now. And it's one, yes, the content has to be specific to the role, but also I believe that the creative, the marketing itself has to be aligned with the human, which in healthcare is kind of a big deal. Cause I don't know how much time you spend in this space, but B2B healthcare, man, like if you are a model and want to go take a picture in baby blue with an iPad, you're just going to make money all day long on the stock photography. We eat that stuff up. And I don't think it resonates. I think it's old school. I don't think anybody's really buying it anymore. And so we're really at Simpler, we're trying to be a little different. We're trying to be authentic and really It's not all there yet on our SYMPLR.com website, but we are excited to be coming out with a new approach that really aligns to the humans that buy, sell, use, engage with our solutions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's just been this, we're getting right into it here, but there's this shift that I think toward authenticity now, where it's like having a bunch of people's faces on your website that are, you know, that are models versus having a bunch of people on your website that are real people that actually buy from you or, you know, partner with you or do business with you is a pretty big shift. And like, you know, a place like healthcare, which is like extremely regulated and there's all this other stuff going on. So you have other sort of like concerns there.
Right.
But for a lot of tech companies where you don't have a lot of that stuff, it's like, you definitely have no excuse there, but it's like, put your customers' faces on there, you know, put Jane Doe, who's your VP of IT, like throw her on the website.
That's right.
Put her in your ads.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more.
How is your team built to acquire those accounts? How's your marketing team built?
Yeah. So a couple things. First of all, we're in about 9 out of 10 hospitals today. So we've got a pretty broad presence. And I call that out because it means we're not actually acquiring new business. We're not acquiring from accounts who we don't have. We're increasing our footprint by and large. We've also grown pretty quickly through acquisition as well as organic. So that creates a couple challenges and a couple opportunities, to be perfectly honest. The challenge is that we've got a lot of legacy brands that in certain cases are more well-known than our current brand. We've also got to bring all of these different solutions together, get them organized. I mentioned that pillar concept. And so we've organized our solutions into these four different kind of pillars, but those are loosely organized around buyers as well. So my marketing team, kind of at the core of the marketing team, is product marketing. And our product marketers align to buyer solution pillars. They're the ones that are thinking about kind of the deep messaging, the so what, if you will, of why this thing that we're offering is going to bring value to our customers. Surrounding that product marketing is growth marketing. So growth marketing definitely helps us support a deeper focus on things like SEO, paid search. We still do that, events, webinars, because as much as we're in the existing hospital, a lot of times we find it's with one of the buyer groups and not all of them. And so we need to make sure they're aware of what we do. Obviously, ABM is a huge piece of this. I'm sure we'll talk about this multiple times during this conversation, but the ability to kind of laser focus in on the exact buyer that we're looking for with our growth marketing initiatives is a huge value plus for us. I have a creative team that is actually pretty important. Again, back to that human-specific marketing and building out a very focused approach to how we go to market that is a little bit different means we spend a good bit of time making sure our creative really resonates, that our content has high engagement, and then marketing operations underpinning that work. Across the board, our corporate marketing team is what's driving brand awareness, which for, again, in our world is pretty damn important. Beyond the fact that we're also bringing these solutions together, we're creating a category, which is kind of a cool, fun thing to be a part of. I guess I can't cuss here. It's a lot of work. I was going to say it's a heck of a ton of work. I don't know. But yeah, creating a category has been an interesting opportunity for us. And so my corporate marketing team has a really big role to play in driving that thought leadership.
Yeah. And what's your marketing strategy in a little elevator pitch here?
Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, it is sort of this, you know, our thesis is that all of these different areas exist in healthcare technology. The average hospital kind of buys into three different areas. They buy on electronic health records, the things that keep track of, you know, our visits to the hospital. They have to spend money on their enterprise resource programs, kind of how the payments work, on the rev cycle management, the back and forth with the claims. But then there's all of these other things that a hospital has to buy, and they've previously done it independently. So Simpler's thesis is that, listen, I can bring all of these different solutions, the 50 to 150 solutions that you typically have and have to manage, I can replace those with my single offering. I can be your single vendor for that work. As I'm doing this, I'm investing in development and technology so that I'm starting to tie those pieces together as well, putting them onto a single platform, creating really interesting and important workflows for our customers. When I came on board, Ian, it's kind of funny, you know, you spend a lot of time with your customers, you understand kind of how, what are they thinking about, how are they doing, and, you know, market research, we call that. So it, through that process of early market research, we came to find out that our CIOs and VPs of IT called all this other stuff. They literally just called it the other budget. And so it was clearly an area in need of a category name and a way to sort of label this. And our investors had called it governance, risk, and compliance. And so we were sort of saying, hey, we're the governance, risk, and compliance leaders. Nobody knew what the hell we were talking about. Not that catchy. And people, and you kind of stumble on it as it comes out. And so we started calling ourselves and the solutions that we were offering healthcare operations. And we started educating analysts on healthcare operations, educating the market on healthcare operations, ultimately inadvertently educating our competitors as well. But today, healthcare operations and the creation of this category has been incredibly important for us. And so our marketing strategy is really around building out the category, driving simpler brand recognition, but having tight alignment across our go-to-market functions. So that does mean driving pipeline. I mean, at the end of the day, it's how we're going to get paid. So marketing contributes 30% of the pipeline to Simpler. About 15% of our opportunities are closing today. We'd like to see that grow. But that's really a big piece of our marketing strategy, is driving growth. The second one is supporting the innovation, the product marketing that I talked about earlier. And the third component of our strategy is around brand. We want to see ourselves as number one in share of voice, which we've been for the last about 7 quarters now.
Yeah, it's so important. I love the idea of like better operations, better outcomes, and using healthcare operations, because I know a lot of people in healthcare. I literally used to be in healthcare when I was in the Army. And let me tell you, if you want to look at some funky HR operations or healthcare operations, it could take you a decade back into the United States Army. And so I'm like, you know, but gone are the days, right? Surely it can't be like that anymore. Well, you know, I was talking to one of my friends who's in healthcare. They were doing a clinical rotation, and they were faxing all of their information at the end of every day. And I said, I haven't seen a physical fax machine, I think, since I was in the Army. But it's like, there are certain industries that are farther along in their technology than others. But what should be the most far along is healthcare, right? Yeah. And so, because it leads to patient outcomes, right? It's like, that's why, is because it does. And so I love that positioning. So kudos to you and the team. The idea is like, oh, we're not just doing operations for operations' sake. It's like, better operations lead to better outcomes, like crystal clear. Yeah. Ian got it from the jump.
100%. You got it. And you know, our customers are actually the ones that really came up with that for us. I mean, they are outcomes focused all day long. And so even if it's not clinical outcomes, if it is, you know, outcomes associated with administrative, that is a driver for healthcare. I mean, you know this, one of the challenges in healthcare, the margins are super duper thin. And so efficiency, operational efficiency, it's kind of a critical play in everything they do, which is why when we talk about better operations, you've got to be talking about those outcomes, whether it's ROI or time saved or however you're going to talk about it. But that's a sort of a top of mind for most of our customers. I used to work for Cerner and went on a tour in Ireland with our chief nursing officer at the time, a woman named Charlotte Weaver. And we visited a hospital in Ireland that was 100% paper. And so, and this is kind of like, I tell the story because we're not that far away from that world where, you know, you're storing the records in little carts, driving them around, pulling them out and hoping that your physician's reading through the whole thing. To be honest, I mean, we're a little further with medical records, but AI has got some interesting promise that it can bring to this space, certainly. But that's the digital record piece will be another conversation. I'm happy to dive in, but I probably know enough these days to be dangerous.
Well, yeah. And the reason why I say that, and the reason why I think it's important for our conversation right now to talk about marketing, is like that as we go into the how you spend your money, it is important to think about like where the mindset is of the buyer in that journey. Like we talk about digital transformation a lot, but they're thinking about these things as like a massive, never-ending uptaking. But there are parts that in healthcare specifically that are pretty darn far behind.
You're right. Yeah. There's a lot of on-premise stuff. I mean, we see that all the time. That's part of what we're able to do and we're investing is taking on-premise software, moving it to the cloud, you know, and it's crazy, but gosh, I think it was a year ago, I ran a HIMSS a focus group at HIMSS, which is this big healthcare information management society. And we were asking the group questions about, you know, the cloud, their cloud infrastructure, kind of conversations. Here in Silicon Valley, it would be, you know, this is pretty boring conversation. I don't even need to ask questions. Well, 50% of the CIOs in the room were actually reluctant to even talk about the cloud because they have so many on-prem solutions that they're still running. They're just not even set up to start thinking about that. Like it's, you know, it's crazy, but that's really, you're right. Faxes, on-prem software. I mean, we've got some work to do in our healthcare systems today.
Yeah. It's just, it's different than the CIO of a tech company.
100%.
Without a doubt. And the problem is way harder too. The problem is infinitely harder and infinitely, not to say it's more or less important than for tech, but like you're obviously people's lives are at stake. Right. And so they need better operations. And let's talk about how you get it to them for our next segment, the playbook.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game.
Where you open up the playbook and talk about the tactics that help you win. What are your three channels or tactics that are your most uncuttable budget items?
Absolutely. So my number one, I love this question, by the way. I'm actually going to call it brand acquisition. So we don't have a huge budget. We try not to spend a lot on superfluous stuff here at Simpler so we can direct as much as we can back into our product development efforts. So that means that when I think about a brand budget, an advertising budget, and an acquisition budget, I just don't have that luxury. I got to kind of smush these two things together. And to be honest, it serves us well from a B2B perspective. So my brand acquisition efforts, which is really around driving acquisition with a very recognizable brand, is kind of a critical success factor. So I would not cut that. And that would definitely be an area that I would continue to kind of lean into. You know, you talk about healthcare and the needs in healthcare. And so as we start to drive awareness of some of the work that we're doing, that brand acquisition means that as people start to hear about us, they can search for us. They can't buy if they've never heard from us. So if they don't even know who the heck Simpler is or that Simpler even exists, and maybe they're associating some of the work we're doing with some of our legacy brands, we're dead in the water. So that brand acquisition means that I'm going to be able to kind of rise up in search terms. I'm going to be able to be something that you can talk about with the guy down the hall. You can ask questions about, you can go research on a little bit to understand more about what we're doing. And even if it's not just Simpler, but even just that notion of healthcare operations, that, hey, there's this way that we're starting to think about healthcare that means we can be more operationally efficient in our back office administrative software. You know, heck, I'll take that all day long. So that means, you know, investing in search engine optimization, which is really, really more about content, meaningful content that is going to align with the humans, that ICP that is looking for whatever the case may be. If they're looking to understand how can I get efficiency out of my quality outcomes or out of my compliance efforts, we want to have the content there to help you think about what to look for when you're buying a supply chain software, for example. So that's really important to us. And obviously doing that activity through things like events, webinars, paid search, all critical. So that would be my number one, brand acquisition.
By the way, I say brand gen all the time.
So. You do? Oh, I love that. Okay. Brand gen.
This is basically years ago when I was thinking about sort of like certain types of initiatives. So like you could say like an event, a dinner party, doing a podcast. There's certain types of events where you're sort of like co-creating with the people that you're selling to. And I just thought, well, it's brand because you have this brand halo effect, right? If someone speaks on stage with you in your conference, everyone who's watching and who's attending or watching online, they're getting the brand halo effect. But the individual experience of the people who are doing that stuff, like that's also, you know, it's acquisition. It's the demand gen piece of it. And I thought, well, isn't that sort of a blended thing? Whereas like search is not, right? Like search is like paid search is like part of it is like purely a demand gen. Yeah, there's a little bit of brand in there, of course, but like it's not like 50-50 like some of these other things are. And, you know, making a podcast series or doing an event or whatever. So anyways, that's how I always thought of it. and find you somebody who can do both, right? And that's like, that's the, any brand gen campaign to me is someone where you can point at like, we shaped 7 accounts that are key accounts for us. And right. by the way, you know, 100 people watched, listened, engaged in some way too.
Those sound like pretty good metrics. I'll take those all day long.
I know, right?
Yeah. But you're right. You're exactly right. I think that's the way we think about it. I don't know that I hear you on paid search. I do think a little bit of some of the paid search work, at least that we're doing, and it's becoming more demand gen as we've gone along our path. And we're 3 years in now with the simpler name and kind of bringing all of these different solutions together. But certainly at the beginning, a lot of even our paid search was just around driving one awareness for simpler and what we do, and then also starting to bring in and attract folks to our thought leadership activities.
Yeah, totally. And it's a great point. I mean, the promoting content, promoting thought leadership, and of course, like when you relaunch a brand, it's a different universe. That's why we talk all this stuff at the top of this episode, is you got to learn exactly where you are coming from, because otherwise right. the tactics wouldn't make sense. That's super helpful. Okay, so number two.
So that would be brand acquisition. I'm going to take that on my budget line item. The other one I'm going to do is that category creation. So product alignment. To me, that has just really been, it's really important for how we are showing up. And really, it's taking this huge bucket of solutions, the one that I talked about with the IT team, that their other bucket, and making it make sense, driving awareness. We do that with, obviously, our product marketing team. I mentioned that earlier, building the category. But we also invest in market intelligence and our relationships with the analysts, which is so, so critical to us. It's educating the analysts. It's helping them understand what we do so that, in turn, they can actually write about us. You know, we're finally at the point this last summer where one of the biggest analysts, and it's probably the biggest analyst in healthcare from our perspective, KLAS, they're kind of like the Consumer Reports for healthcare technology spend. They put out a report on healthcare operations. So we were really excited to see them talking about and aligning and bringing the kind of the market together around this need and recognizing that there's a category of solutions. These solutions can address your complex issues in terms of managing spend and having more efficiency, managing your workforce, managing your provider data. And that was exactly how we designed the category. So we worked with them, actually. We educated them. They also educated us. It was a two-way relationship. But the ability to have an analyst start talking about us from a category creation perspective was a huge win. Under that category creation piece, when you think about creating a category, we're also sort of thinking a little bit about how do we create people whose names, who work in that category? Like, how do I create mm-hmm. a healthcare operations director?
Yep.
Or the manager of healthcare operations for workforce? And so, you know, crazily enough, but thinking about not just our content, but also working with our training team, working with the ways that we're reaching out and organizing our own customers and helping them to learn and think about healthcare operations, just to really embed this into the way that they are using not only our solutions, but training themselves. And that does a couple things. It does help our competitors probably a little bit, but it really helps simpler as well. It helps healthcare, because now I'm training you to be a healthcare operations specialist, which means you're going to think about not just those one-point solutions anymore, but the opportunities to align workflows. Wouldn't it be cool if that workforce management staffing piece I was talking about earlier, if I knew all the people that were in the hospital were also credentialed? Those are two separate systems today.
Yep.
Great. Okay. So now I'm only staffing and scheduling people who actually have the right skill set. Or if there's a quality incident, I can immediately kind of connect that, the challenges associated with that quality incident, the work that we're doing, I can align it with the staffing, the scheduling, as well as that credentialing piece. So there's lots of ways that those workflows start to connect in very meaningful manners. So it's not a human and a spreadsheet that's having to do it, but we're actually letting that happen with our product. But bottom line, that's all about category creation for us and product alignment.
I love that. Anytime, you know, the category creation sort of playbook is being used, I strongly believe what you believe, which is that there's a new job created and somebody's got to be sitting in it. But the idea that like the CIO is this person who owns all of technology for a company, that worked 20 years ago. It does not definitively does not work today. Like we all know that, right? Yeah. And CIOs know that too. And that's why business, you know, line of business unit, you know, owners have so much more, you know, control over that stuff than they ever did. My point being is that I love the idea that you're pushing towards, hey, someone needs to sit in this seat and oversee all of this because it's connected and it should be one person who's looking at it all.
You know, I think that to really ultimately own or say you have created a category, I think you kind of need to have three things. I definitely think you've got to have analysts talking about this category. Like it can't just be me standing up here saying, I created a category, and you saying, okay, Kristen, tell me about your category. And I'm like, well, but I think you've got to have other people, and not just like my mom and my dad, but you know, actual like industry analysts talking about the category. I think you do need to have people that are, that like, if it's really a category, people are going to have jobs around it. There's whole ways of working around that thing that exists, the category. And then I also think though, you know, good, bad, or ugly, that you've got competition starting to say they offer solutions in that category. And we're certainly seeing that on our side. We're seeing competition using our messaging, taking like all kinds of stuff. But it's a good thing. It definitely is keeping us on our toes. But I think those are the three elements that really you can put the kind of the stake in the ground that says, yeah, I've got a category here.
All right, budget item number three.
So item number three for me is really kind of this notion of business to human marketing. It's what we were talking about earlier. And so when I think about marketing to the human, the mom that goes home as a single mom and takes care of her kids is going to be, you know, using a variety of different sources of digital media, of connecting with the person that's got a weekend that's planned watching golf or whatever. We consider that moment of how do we resonate with that the person? And so we're investing in creative, strong brand strategy to drive alignment and having really good creative that is engaging. I mean, both the content, the writing, but also the way it looks. Like I want to pick this thing up or I want to click on that and dive deeper into that website or that web page because it speaks to me. And so thinking about how we do that means really understanding our ideal customer persona, but it also means investing in a unique point of view that is maybe a little bit different than anything else that's out there.
How do you think about bringing that message to the market? What are the different ways you do that?
Certainly, as if you look at some of the work we're doing, we're getting ready to, you know, showcase some new ways that we're thinking about Simplr. It's an evolution. You know, your brand grows, it's got a life. Thinking about how we show up from our website to our events, to the ways that the clothing we wear, the way our associates kind of talk about us. I think there's multiple different touch points, but they've all got to resonate around an aligned personality and an aligned brand voice. And so to be honest, we're going through the exercise right now. So we've been probably about 3 years with our current brand personality voice that we've been using. It's coming, it's time to do a little bit, kind of just a zhuzhing and a cleanup. And so we're going through that and it's a fun exercise. It means certainly we think about it, our team, and we're probably the ones that are guiding those conversations, but also we're driven by our customers. The voice of customers is really important to us. Understanding how our customers perceive us, what is important to them, and then thinking about how our brand shows up with that in mind. Are we kind of the nerdy, quirky leader that can help them, you know, I don't know, get the job done, save money? How much of an expert are we versus a partner? We're sort of playing with some of those elements right now. And it also has to align with who we are as a company. So we're a pretty transparent company. We're pretty young. Mm-hmm. We're pretty, even, I'm not talking about age. I'm talking about like personality and the way that we operate. We're virtual. Our CEO does not come from healthcare. He comes from tech. You know, so we've got a mix of personalities, our executive team. We've got some really deep healthcare experts, but we've also got folks from other industries. And so we're taking a little bit of a different approach at Simplr. And to be honest, our customers are rewarding us for it. It's a little bit of a fresh approach. So our brand needs to speak to that.
What about something that you're not investing in? You're one of your cuttable budget items.
Yes. So myself, probably anyone on my team will tell you what we're not investing in is email. We do email. We probably do more than we should, but we're definitely not doing a lot of email. We don't find that it's necessary. It's not that effective. Certainly, the big broad email brushes, kind of the spray and pray approach. We just, one, I think we bother people with it. I don't like it. I try to cut that spam as fast as I can. I will say when I talk about email, I'm talking about email programs, kind of the traditional marketing programs. There's certainly a space, and you know, my BDR team does a terrific job of direct outreach, leveraging email, having a conversation, both a digital conversation as well as a verbal conversation with a customer. We do that for sure. But old school email, I think it's dead.
Interesting. Do you feel like people have too much of it? Do you feel like the newsletter stuff isn't working? Do you feel like it's not personalized enough? Like, well, I guess, what email do you like receiving?
So it's a great point. And I am talking about the mass broad email of like, hey, Simpler, let me tell you about Simpler. Let me just send you an email about a product. Those, you know,
I know.
I think we do see a time and place actually for communicating with our existing customers. So from a customer marketing perspective, there's absolutely a time and place for email. And it is a helpful way for us to get in front of our customers. As much as possible, we want to give them information while they're in their applications themselves. So using tools like Pendo, for example, providing that, using that as a service in a way to kind of get them their newsletters and their content. But for those that aren't there and for the products that aren't there, providing, you know, a newsletter, a way to keep people updated about what's going on, letting them know about different events that we're going to. Email does have a place and time for that. And we have to use it. I'm just saying it's not, you see the open rates, you see the amount of people that delete it. I don't think it's that successful. I don't know that we figured out the perfect alternative to jump to. In B2B, text is a little tricky for multiple reasons. But there's interesting conversations I see happening on our website with our chat tool, for example.
Yep.
There's deeper conversations that are happening where the customers are starting to do their research and engaging and buying than there are in a kind of an older model of just like, let me send you something. You're going to receive it at a certain point in time and then come back.
Yeah, I totally agree. Using great tools like Qualified. What about like your little experiment budget, your 5% budget, something that you want to invest in that you haven't invested in yet that you're excited about?
So more than 5%, we are investing in ABM. We do have a pretty much a test and learn mentality across the board. And so I'm a big fan, and I'm maybe a little bit of a risk taker, but let's try it. Let's get it out there, test it, fail fast, and then move on. And so we do that across the board. But right now, our big investment is really going towards ABM. And we're standing up that whole program. We're figuring out what works, what doesn't. We're working with our partners who've been, you know, super helpful bringing us along the path, as well as with our own teams, with our sales and product and growth teams to get that in place. But that's really right now where we're putting any dollars that are test dollars.
Of course. Let's get to our next segment, the dust up.
Uh-oh. Here comes trouble.
You may have heard that there was a dust up involving yours truly.
And now we've got a wild scrum with fights breaking out all over the place.
And it is getting really ugly as we've got punches and kicks.
Where we talk about healthy tension, whether that's with your board, your sales teams, your competitors, or just anyone else. Kristen, have you had a memorable dust up in your career?
Of course. I think like you'd be a crazy person if you said you hadn't. And honestly, I had to look up dust up for this little chit chat. So I was like, what is a dust up? Yeah. So, you know, I remember a time I had an old boss I did not see eye to eye with. He wanted to market technology that wasn't complete. We couldn't live up to our value proposition. We didn't have customers live on this. It was super tricky. This would be more than I would say healthy tension. So, you know, ultimately, if doing this, marketing this solution would create a lot of confusion for potential customers. And my concern was that it would create, you know, irreparable brand damage as well. In the end, we really didn't see eye to eye, unfortunately. So that just did not work. Myself and a number of others ended up walking away. But I think that, gosh, there's dust ups all the time. And I do think, here at Simpler, we've taken this Lencioni approach. I don't know if you're familiar with that, the advantage. It's a way of thinking about how organizations, how executive teams can have organizational health. Hmm. He proposes kind of a number of different ways of kind of supporting and managing yourself. But bottom line, it's like build a really cohesive leadership team, which means getting into being able to have a difficult conversation, being okay with a healthy tension and finding ways to work through that, driving clarity, and then over-communicating the clarity. So once you've got the clarity, you over-communicate the clarity, and then you reinforce the clarity. And so that's something we do at Simplr. We have a management operating structure that we're really intentional about that gives us space to come together and disagree, quite honestly, and then to work through any disagreements. So it looks something like, you know, on a regular basis, we've got an executive leadership team meeting every week. We do a stand-up. Our ELT is meeting every single day. So I am meeting with my head of sales, with my chief product officer, folks where I might have the most tension, or CFO, and on a regular basis. So we're already communicating, driving clarity, and then re-communicating and reinforcing that clarity on a regular basis. And then across our teams, we do a monthly town hall. We do a monthly Q&A. We do it at the corporate level. And then again, you know, functionally. So I've got a marketing town hall, bringing the marketing team together every single quarter, and then one-on-ones. So every single person in the organization is getting a one-on-one every week with their leader, kind of rolls up, as you can imagine. But that alone, I think, helps immensely to drive towards resolution where dust-ups happen.
Let's get to our final segment, quick hits. These are quick questions and quick answers. Just like how Qualified helps companies generate pipeline quickly, tap into your greatest asset, your website, and identify your most valuable visitors and instantly, and I mean instantly, start sales conversations. Quick and easy, just like these questions. Go to qualified.com to learn more. Quick hits. Kristen, are you ready?
Shoot.
Number one, do you have a hidden talent or skill that is not on your resume?
I do. I think I'm a pretty creative thinker. My mom was a kindergarten teacher and my dad was a psychologist. So you put that together and you get like behavioral economics with a lot of color and a little construction paper.
I have a question about that. That is not it's not a quick hit. You got a fine and studio arts management thingy from Stanford. Why'd you do that? That was recent.
Yeah, really recent. Actually, it's a photography program, fine arts program that I just took. I'm always learning. I recently learned how to become a spin instructor. This is my latest thing. Every year come New Year's Eve, I sort of set something that I'm going to do, some crazy thing. This year I was going to learn photography. And rather than just learn photography by taking a course at some photography shop, I thought, heck, let's go all the way, jump into a class in Stanford. It was amazing. It was every night, five nights a week. It kind of kicked my ass a little bit, but really, really interesting. And honestly, as a head of marketing, wow, I can't believe I didn't know some of the stuff, you know, alignment of art and how we think about color and the positioning of a subject on a frame. It was pretty cool.
Favorite book, podcast, or TV show that you recommend?
So one of my favorite books that I've ever read was this book called Nudge by Toller and Sunstein. An old boss actually recommended it to me. It's kind of an interesting marketing book, but it's how we influence people's decisions with little nudges. And the notion that you and I, we're kind of lazy. So we're going to take the path of least resistance. So if you put something in front of us, we're probably going to do it. Anyway, they're Choice Architects. Great book. Highly recommend it. And then my podcast would be New York Times Daily. I'm a junkie. I listen to it every day.
If you weren't in marketing or business at all, what do you think you'd be doing?
You know what? I think I would be the CEO of a canoeing or backpacking company. Years ago, I used to take people on canoe trips up in Northern Ontario in Canada. And I still do. We go every summer. I'm totally offline. But yeah, I think I could totally rock selling canoes.
I'm sold. I love doing that stuff here in Northern California. Best advice for a first-time CMO?
I think my best advice for a first-time CMO is kind of perk your head up, get out of your swim lane. You know, you don't have to just, in fact, I think you're a better CMO if you're not just focused on marketing. If you're thinking about the whole business, the top line, the bottom line, it's going to give you an understanding of kind of across the board, what everybody else is thinking about from their seat, whether it's the market, the employees, the customers, our board, certainly the CEO. I think that's just critical for any CMO.
Well, this has been a wonderful conversation, Kristen. Thanks so much for joining. For listeners, you can go to simpler.com and check out all their stuff. Really cool marketing. And, you know, check out those roles, all the different roles. If you're in healthcare, definitely give them a check. And if you know someone in healthcare, give them a nudge, as Kristen said. Any final thoughts? Anything to plug?
I think the big thing I would plug is our Simpler crew. We have really terrific people. My team, my marketing team, I'm blessed to work with a ton of creative geniuses. We've got some great vendors. And of course, our customers. My biggest plug is just a little grace for our healthcare systems. I mean, man, they are under pressure, workforce shortages, tight margins. Now we got claims issues on top of that. So, you know, give them a break.
Indeed. I totally hear you. Kristen, thanks again. We will talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to our friends at Qualified.com, a conversational sales and marketing platform that transforms the way B2B companies sell. Go to Qualified.com to learn more.